Elizabeth Elliot says, "I believe there is such a thing as self-esteem and self-image, but I do not think that it is something that you and I ought to be paying much attention to. Life is too short for that, as far as I'm concerned." She says, "I would much rather use the energy and the time that I have and direct it towards knowing God, worshiping God, loving God, finding out who He is, and daily praying that He will make me much more like Himself." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of author and teacher Elizabeth Elliot.
Rex Harrison in that musical, My Fair Lady, sang, "Let a woman in your life and your serenity is through. She'll redecorate your home from the cellar to the dome and go on to the enthralling fun of overhauling you." I'm sure that it is a temptation, perhaps much more of a temptation to women to redecorate their men than it is men to redecorate their women, but that is also a problem. I've talked to a good many men who wish their wives were a little bit more feminine or a little bit more conscious of their looks or their weight or their dress. Jesus gave three conditions for discipleship. The first is you give up your right to yourself, and the second, take up your cross. Now, most of us don't think of our spouses as a cross most of the time, I would hope. But when Jesus said, take up your cross, he was making it very plain that anybody who was going to follow a crucified one, and Jesus was not yet crucified, of course, when he said this, but this is what is involved. If you want to be my disciple, then it has to be a daily yes to God. After having said no to yourself, then it's yes to God. And once you have given up your right to yourself, it's not a vacuum in your life. Now it is a glad, wholehearted, daily acceptance of this woman or this man. Abraham was to walk before God and be perfect. But Abraham had to walk with Sarah before God. And it's in God's strength that I am enabled to walk day by day. But what if my husband or wife is not the solace and the comfort and the companionship that I was expecting him or her to be? A woman came up to me after a meeting and she said, "What would you tell a young woman, my daughter, who is planning to divorce her husband because he's not meeting all her needs?" Well, I said, the poor girl, first of all, she must recognize that this is an outrageous expectation. It's absolutely impossible for any human being to meet another human being's needs. She is expecting far more of her husband than any husband can possibly give. I'm sure that all the tremendous avalanche of books on marriage and the multiplicity of marital seminars which are available have done much good, but I think there is also a great danger in thinking that I can expect of this man what so-and-so expects of her husband. You can sit there and listen to Mary tell about what George does for her and scratch your head and think, well, John doesn't do that for me. And then you begin to get higher and higher and more unreasonable expectations. And this poor girl had obviously been sold a bill of goods, and she had raised her expectations to a ridiculous height in the thought that her husband could meet all of her needs. If my husband is not meeting all of my needs, it's in order that I may turn to Jesus Christ and ask him to help me to meet my husband's needs. That should be my concern. If love gives up itself, and love gives up its rights, then love is concerned for the other person and to meet the other person's needs. So I'm saying yes to this person with all his failings and peculiarities, and no to myself. And this is a lifelong, one day at a time process. One day at a time, I must learn a little bit more about treating my husband as I would treat Christ. He that receiveth you receiveth me. You chose to marry this person because you loved her. That's usually the way it works. But now you must love this person because you married her. Every day you must choose to love this person because you married him or her. It is a daily choice. So thank God for this person, and remember that it is a lifelong yes to the will of God. Second thing let's think about, learning to cleave. Jesus said that a man must leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. As we were driving here this morning, a big sign caught my eye out of the corner of my eye, and I thought it said marital arts. I looked again, and it said martial arts. Well, there's only the shift of two letters there. And I thought, sometimes we treat marriage as if it were martial arts. Self-defense, some way of enabling myself to get through this conflict with an enemy. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about learning to cleave to this person whom I love and whom I chose because I loved. I have a list of the five major areas of conflict in most marriages, and I think you probably know what they are. Communication seems to be at the top of the list, at least the top of women's lists. Money, in-laws, children, and sex. Now, I'm not going to try to deal with each of those in any detail, but let's just mention this business of in-laws. If you're going to learn to cleave to this person that you're married to, then you must leave your own parents. And sometimes it takes a long time to realize that you have made a break. You have left behind your childhood. You have moved into adult responsibility. Now your first priority is your husband or your wife. And when there's conflict or choices to be made between the parents and your spouse, the spouse must come first. Our waitress this morning in the motel told us, we were commending her for the wonderful job she was doing, and she said, they call me Mrs. Wonderful. And I said, does your husband call you Mrs. Wonderful? And she said, we're separated right now. And then she said, but not for long. She said, he's got to get his priorities sorted out. She said, and I am priority number one, and our children are priority number two. She said, he thought he wanted to be single again, but he has found out. He's finding out real fast. He really didn't want to be single. But he's got to learn this before he can come back. But she said, we'll be back together. I know. She said, I never thought we wouldn't. But she said, he's got to learn where his priorities are. And that's a tough lesson, and we all have problems with that, don't we? And I've seen a number of situations where there's a live-in in-law, and one spouse, the child of that person, has to make a definite break and realize that the first responsibility is to the spouse. And sometimes the husband must protect his wife from his own mother. That's a tough thing to do. I'm not going to try to go into that any further, but when you become a man, you put away childish things, you cut the apron strings, and you accept the responsibility of a wife. To cleave means to stick closely, to be united in strong affection, to cling with strong attachment. As the psalmist said, my bones cleave to my skin. It's the opposite of split, the opposite of divide or sever. The most shocking revelation comes through discovering that you are stuck with this person, an incompatible person. Some of you don't feel this way at all. Some of you that would say, I don't know what she's talking about. My husband and I are wonderfully compatible. She must have had three terrible marriages. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that there are many incompatibilities between any two human beings. And I've just recently read a wonderful story about a missionary in Africa whom I never heard of before. Her name was Florence Alshorn. And she said, she wrote this, I need God so much here. Everything is so difficult. There is so much ungoodness in everything. I keep reminding myself that I am here for Christ and that all the wild and miserable things, as well as the holy and calm ones, must beat through me if I am to be used at all. And I thank God that I am here and that it is not easy. I always wanted that. My colleague is a dear in some ways, but the matter of fact is that Iganga is a hopeless sort of place. This is where Iganga was where she was working. My colleague has stuck it. It just happens not to have affected her health, but it has absolutely rotted her nerves, and she has the most dreadful fits of temper. Sometimes she doesn't speak at all for 2 days. Just now we've finished up 3 weeks with never a decent word or smile. One day, the old African matron came to me when I was sitting on the veranda crying my eyes out. She sat at my feet, and after a time, she said, "I have been on this station for 15 years, and I have seen you come out, all of you saying you have brought us a savior. But I have never seen this situation saved yet." It brought me to my senses with a bang. I was the problem for myself. I knew enough of Jesus Christ to know that the enemy was the one to be loved before you could call yourself his follower. And I prayed in great ignorance as to what it was that this same love might be in me. And I prayed as I have never prayed before. Slowly, things rightened. Whereas before she had been going about upsetting everybody with long, deep, dreadful moods, and I had been going to my school depressed and lifeless, both of us found our way to lighten each other. She had a great generosity, and I must have been a cruel burden to her, worn out as she was. But I did see that as we two drew together in a new relationship, the whole character of the work of the station altered. The children felt it and began to share in it and to do little, brave, unselfish things they had never done before. Now, this is a single woman speaking of her single colleague, but it is exactly the principle that we're talking about here. It goes right across the board in every human relationship. But if it's true in any relationship besides marriage, it is most emphatically and necessarily true in marriage.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliot. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.